Yeah, so I was aware we were looking at the subject of prayer today, and as I was thinking about today, I was thinking about two parts of the Bible that came to mind. One of them is kind of an obvious one, one of them maybe less obvious, but the first one was where Jesus says, "Ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you'll find. Knock, and the door will be opened for you. For he who asks is given. He who seeks finds. And he who knocks, the door is open." And the other verse, the story. Do you remember the story of the parable of the persistent widow? Who Jesus tells a parable about a widow who is trying to get justice from a bad judge. And so every day he's banging on the door of the judge saying, "Give me justice." And in the end, the judge is just to get her off his back, basically gives her justice. And God's like, you know, if you can get justice from a an unjust judge, how much more is God, who is good, going to give you, you know, what you ask for? And the parallel he draws in that other passage about asking, and, you know, you who are fathers, you know how to give good gifts. So Jonathan, for example, it was funny, it was a good illustration. Peter was asking for just one more biscuit today. Now, Jonathan knows how to give good gifts. If every time Peter asks for a biscuit, he gives him a biscuit, that's not knowing how to give a good gift. And I think God is the same with us. It's like he knows how to give what is helpful for us. And sometimes we live in that place of waiting for an answer to prayer. And it's a mystery. Actually, sometimes it can seem to us, this is obviously a good gift. You know, if it's like a healing or something that we kind of want to see happen. When we're living in the now and the not yet, when we're living in that place, it is a mystery where we have an all-powerful God, and yet, for some reason, he wants us to tarry in prayer. He wants us to persevere in prayer. And I read this psalm out. It's just a short psalm. And then I hand back to Pete. It's Psalm 130. And I think it illustrates this idea really, really well. It says, "Out of the depths I've cried to you, O Lord. Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to the voice of my supplications. If you, Lord, should mark iniquities, O Lord, who could stand? But there is forgiveness with you, that you may be feared. I wait for the Lord. My soul does wait, and in his word do I hope. My soul waits for the Lord more than watchmen for the morning. Indeed, more than watchmen for the morning. O Israel, hope in the Lord. For with the Lord there is loving kindness, and with him is abundant redemption. And he will redeem Israel from all his iniquities." And I love that image. I mean, I love it and I hate it. But there's that sense where he talks about the watchmen waiting for the morning. So basically, it's the guy. It's like the guys on the night shift, clock watching the clock, waiting for the end of their shift so they can go home, living for the weekend. You know, it's that same anticipation that God will come. And you know what? The morning always comes, doesn't it? The morning always comes. And it's the same with God. When we're living in that place where we haven't yet seen the answer that we want to see, it's just required for us to live in that place of trust that God is good and he will come.
Thanks for waving back. So I don't have very much to say, which may be a relief. I've just got a couple of things kind of just to say on the subject of prayer. So a bit closer, okay. Hold it a bit closer. Smooth. So when I was asked if there was anything I wanted to share this morning, I was thinking long and hard because it's such a huge topic. I mean, if you look at the internet, there is a whole internet of things written about prayer, and it's like, you know, what can I possibly add to that or draw out of that, which might be a bit easier. And there's just sort of one thing and one example that I want to give this morning. So the first words I typed on my computer screen were, I'm going to begin with the disclaimer that I am not an expert on prayer. I felt that was a good opening. And then I realised that that's kind of a really weird kind of phrase to use, an expert in prayer. Can prayer be something that you can be an expert in? Because really, at its heart, I think prayer is a means of connecting with God. I mean, I could probably say with, you know, a reasonable level of justification that I am an expert in connecting with Jonathan. I'm married to him. We've been married for many years. Many years. Numerous. And 15, yes, I knew that. But I probably couldn't really say I am an expert in Jonathan. All things Jonathan, I know them. Because stick me in a room with him at work or at a conference full of other strategic planners, I'm really not going to have a lot to say there. So it's not a perfect metaphor, but kind of it says that there's always more to God to be knowing. And however much you know him, there is always more to be revealed because he is so big and so vast. Yeah, and so because of that, I think to be an expert in prayer, you'd have to be an expert in a relationship with God. And relationships just don't really require us to be experts, as far as I can see. They require us to be present, and they require us to connect, but they don't really require expertise. So I guess what I'm ultimately saying is that I found it a comforting thought that we don't need to be an expert in prayer. We just need to be praying. And the more that we, and as we do that, we learn more about God and we grow closer to him to understand him better. And it's all about the relationship is what it comes down to. And then just in terms of an example, there is, you know, there are many, many ways in which we can pray, many things that we can pray for and about and all sorts. And again, there's always new things to be discovering. Just this week in small group, I was pleasantly surprised by a new way of praying. And it kind of came across really unexpectedly. We prayed for someone for healing. And I happened to be leading. And I just sort of felt to stop not launching into the Bible study and thing that I had planned, but just to see if there was any other prayer needs in the room before we carried on. And then all of a sudden there were sort of suggestions for more healing, and we were calling to mind things that healings that God had performed previously, other ways in which he had moved. And I felt that just really raised my faith, and it changed the way I prayed, remembering the things that God has done before. It kind of builds faith, and it opens into praying for more. And I think that's sort of applicable in all areas. So that's what I had to share today. Thank you very much.
Be sure to share my prayer life, my Christian walk with God over now 40 years, I guess, which is quite a time, and longer than some of you have been around. But it's been a real walk, and as I was preparing this, or thinking about preparing what on earth I might say to you, I felt the Lord wanting to inspire me again to pray by remembering what he's done for me, what he's said to me, and then maybe he will inspire you. I don't think I will, but I pray that something he shares through me and through others, through Rach, through Emily, will really hit a note. I believe that's what he wants. Anyway, let's see what he does. But Prayer for me started when I was 17, failing to get a girlfriend, really bored with church, and I came out of my Anglican church in Kent, and suddenly I just knew there was a God, and it was completely random, but I remember it now. It was in August 1975, because I've started to write these down years later, these connections with God. Well, they happen every day, but these particular ones. And it was with such certainty and so out of the blue, looking back, I think it was God saying to, calling me. A bit like Jesus saying to his disciples on the beach, follow me, and then wandering off. It's like, I'm here. And that was it. But what it did was it gave me a thirst. Because actually I didn't pray anything at that start. That's where it began. But I found God had spoken to me. And it was real. And I wanted that connection. I wanted it. And I still have that all these years, that yearning for the real thing, the real deal, the connect with my maker. So if that's all you remember, that's great. But prayer for me, I'm going to go through several bits. If it's too long, will you do this? I used to do that at work when someone goes on. Right, get on with it. If you've got the point and I need to move on, do this. Yeah, and I'll fast forward because I'm going to go through quickly, just briefly, why I pray for me personally, how I pray over these 40 years, three ways typically for me. This is very personal. What it's been like for me, the fruits of it for me and for others that I've been told. And then if there's time, seven or eight ways I find God speaking back to me or even starting the conversation. But if there isn't time for that, you'll do that. Or whatever. Okay, I work in a harsh working world like many of you. So, 3 years later, in August 78... it came to the point I remembered that moment of connection with God, and I prayed because I came back from a wild party with my best mate in Leeds at university. I'd stayed up with him in the holidays, and I prayed in my bed with tears because there was no difference to me to my other friends. But I knew there was something real, and I prayed with tears for God to be real to me, to be what I've seen in others, but I didn't know. And I felt a presence of a person. This is true. At the end of my bed, I didn't see anyone, but I knew there was someone there, and I received great peace. And I went to sleep after. I must have been praying for an hour or more. And I woke up and could read the Bible for the first time, even wanted to read the Bible, extraordinary. And I prayed, Lord, I want to follow you. I want to do anything for you. I thank you for saving me. I will be like Paul. Why not? Why can't I be like St. Paul? Because it's you who makes the difference. You who do it. So I'm going on a bit, but these were the key moments. The first one, in 75, I met the Father. I believe it was the Father say. That night I met Jesus. And then 3 days later, in my student group, the Spirit came on me quite randomly, it seemed to me. And I felt the Father say, because he was answering my prayers to do lots, I just want to know you and you to know me. That's all. And so in those 3 days, I met the Father, I felt the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And so when I pray, for me, I typically choose one of them. I don't pray to God. I'll pray to the Father, or I'll pray to the Son, or I'll pray to the Holy Spirit. So why do I pray? The first one, to quench this thirst I have that he's given me for him, the real deal, the authentic bit, the gold, the living water, the thing that quenches me inside. I do it to find out what God's doing and to join in with it. That's the second thing. I think that's all there is to being a Christian. Find out what God's doing where you are and join in. That's it. I think that's all the disciples were called to do. But there we are. That's what I think. And then the third one, to grow in my relationship and daily walk with him. To know him and him to know me. So that's why I'm speeding up. And he gave me two verses when I came back from my meeting full of the Spirit, and I had this joy that glowed inside me like a coal. I woke up every morning. It lasted for about 4 weeks. Every morning, joy, joy. Wow, it's great to remind myself, because I'm often not like that, am I, Linda? Today, he gave me two verses. That I then, those 40 years ago, that I use now to help me to pray. Deuteronomy 4, verse 29. But if from there you seek the Lord your God, you will find him if you seek him with all your heart and with all your soul. Do I want to find him? It's not do I need to, but do, and he looks at my heart. Richard, am I half-hearted? Lord, but that's what he looks for. And that's what happened to me in my bed when Jesus came. These moments I have to want. And the other one is just briefly Isaiah 30 verse 21. Whether you turn to the left or to the right, your ears will hear a voice behind you saying, this is the way, walk in it. So in other words, it's the picture of going wrong. Of going here and making a wrong choice, wrong job, wrong wife, wrong friends, wrong something. But don't worry about it, he said, you'll hear me behind you. And what that means is when I don't hear anything, as often I don't from God, even though this is a talk on prayer, I keep going. I'll keep on. Because I know, and it's my experience, he will tell me, no, we'll come back. You've gone off piste. How am I doing? Is this... No one's done that yet. Or, but this is at the heart. Those two I still use today. See, if I want a connection with God, I've got to really want it. I can't pretend he sees me. Do I really like today? And do you? For what you want, where you're at. I don't know, I'm just sharing. So how do I pray? So that's why, to quench a thirst, to find out what he's doing and join in to grow in my daily walk relationship. The third, how, I do it with thoughts, typically thoughts and words that I understand. I tell him, I talk to him, I get angry with God. This is how I see it from my end of the telescope. This is rubbish. I know you are the Lord. You see it all and I'm just part of it. And I have conversations like that and I channel my frustrations, my despair, my lostness often because I'm a man to him. I also challenge my praise and my joys. I thank him for life. For the health of her, the friends I have, the wife I have, the money, you know, everything I can. So this is what I do with thoughts and words. And the second method is in something called tongues, which is a gift of the Spirit, the Bible, where then you pray in a language that you don't understand. I have no clue what I'm saying at all, and no one typically does. But that's a private means. It's when I'm particularly at work. I'm out of it. I just don't know what to pray. I'm really in the heat. I don't have it. And so I pray in tongues. I don't have to know it, but what I do know and experience is that God hears it, because the Spirit is speaking His Spirit in me. The Spirit He filled with me is praying for me, and I receive a peace. And I know I'm telling Him, even though I'm out of it, I have no idea what to pray or even want to pray at that time. So that's a sort of desperation there. And often others use it for praise. I actually use it privately and when I'm really in a dark place. And the third one is with silent, I call them inner groans. And it may come out with Father. And it's sort of just like He said, know me, see me. Here I am. I'm lost, or I'm grieving, or I'm depressed, or whatever. Or save me. That one's to Jesus. I tend to pray to different. I like to know who I'm talking to, and I like to know who's talking back to me. But that's just me. Where do I pray? My preference would be walking, always, not in a meeting room. For me personally, I find that quite hard sitting, but that's just me. Or lying on my own actually, on a bed, closed eyes, concentrating, trying to see Him, trying to connect my inner. So that's three. Is this okay? Yeah. Now I'm... No. Oh, there's a... Yeah, cut the... So what's it been like? Through that, for me, it's been a way of change. It changed me from a 17-year-old. When I really make these connections, it changes me and it changes the situation. Or if it doesn't change the situation, it helps me accept the situation and be and remain in the situation, even though it's still crappy, if I could put it that way. And so prayer makes a shift. Yeah. And that's very, very important. And so when I get stuck, I have to pray. And I have to find Him. But sometimes I can't. I don't know where He is. I don't get a connection. But then I have to look more. Because I think He's not hiding from me. Although sometimes I think He is. Others would disagree. God does not hide from you. But I find He's not playing with me. But He wants me to say, Richard, do you really, really, really want this from me? And if I give up, I probably don't, if I'm honest with myself. So, what's it been like? Well, here's a few examples. I've had a few, and I've written them down to encourage myself. There's been a few times when the spectaculars happen, and I can remember that connection was like a buzz of electricity, like a flash. And one was praying for my friend in Derek Watson. Linda knows him from another church, very ill with some mystery nervous disease that meant he couldn't work or walk. And they were looking at the psychology of it. And when I visited in London, he was like in this medieval Victorian old psychiatric dark place. And I came out and I just said, Lord, get him out of there. Because he was my friend. And there was a connection. And anyway, he got better, he said, from that time and came out. But it was like power flowed. When Jesus, and there was another time at work, this is only the second time in 40 years, in Mitsubishi Chemical, fifth floor in Tokyo where I would work. The finance director of the Australian group collapsed and actually died. My boss and I think he died. We didn't realize at the time he had a weak heart. He had heart issues. Anyway, we just thought, oh, he's tired and he collapsed. But behind him, I prayed with my boss in front, Lord, bring him back. And he came back. Now everyone thought. But my boss, who doesn't, is not a believer, also agrees with me. He came back to life. And there was that connection. That's the only time I can know what Jesus said, power went from me. In all the crowd, because it's different. And it's like an electric shock, fleeting of the second, which for me, but you don't feel, it's just like it goes. But normally I get a peace and an assurance that he's just heard, that he's holding me, so just get on with it, or do something about it, or ask Linda. She's my wife. That's not. Okay. What's it been like? I mean, there's many others. I think I'll stop there. But there's many other things, the shifts in people. And another one, at university, cycling past my college, my best mate, the one from Leeds, who years before I'd gone up to his party, and suddenly I'm cycling past doing something completely different, and then I just knew he'd be a Christian. The Lord would do that. No, against all the odds, but I knew it with such surety. It wasn't some vague hope. I just knew he would. And why did God do that? He wanted me, and I started to pray for my friend like I'd never, ever prayed before to bring it in. So there's another example of prayer coming one way and going back the other. It's a mutual thing. Is this okay? It's just how it's been. And there's others. I won't go on. So what's it been like? And so there's been a shift. The fruits come with others. So after my party, after my prayer, feeling, I know it was Jesus at the bottom of my bed in the dark, as an 18-year-old now, or 18-and-a-half-year-old, and then being filled of the Spirit. After being filled with the Spirit and this joy every morning, I went round to all my friends I possibly could and apologized. I went with quaking boots, because these are quite, they're not as hard as some of the people you know, but it wasn't the thing. And I said, sorry, I hadn't got the real thing, Christianity. And they said to me, they saw such a change in me. The way I stopped compulsively swearing. Some things just fell off. So you can swear at me all the time. It just water off a duck's back. But it's wonderful to be free of that, of listening to reggae music all the time. That's the only... It's sad. What release. Yeah, they called me Reggae Richard. I was the worst... Worst roommate to have next door. Boom, boom. Oh, it was really cool stuff. But there we are. God released me from that. So there was an inner fruit from prayer. This is all from prayer. And an outer fruit. My friends noticed the change. And so I hold that for work. Where I work, I thought, yeah, he makes a difference. I probably was the only Christian, but I don't know. I don't say that anymore. But in that floor in Tokyo, it doesn't need loads of us. It just needs him with me. And that's okay. It's nicer with others, I tell you. But it doesn't have to be. like that. So there's good fruits. And lastly, how do I hear his voice back? I think there's 7 or 8 ways for me, and there's probably more, but typically over the 4 years, there's been the Holy Spirit gives me impressions. Maybe because I'm an emotional person, for me, I don't know. I get a, like his hand is on me, the Bible says. It's like a gentle pushing down inside, and I will go and speak to someone, or I'll go with it. And for me, that's the Holy Spirit speaking, not in words. That's the the second one, through people, through you, often through Linda. And maybe this one's just for me, because I want the connection, Father and me, Jesus and me, Spirit and me. I'm thirsting for it, but actually he teaches me, yes, you'll pray to me. I could answer back. I know he could. I'll share some of the other ones, but actually it's going to come through Linda or Tom or Joel or Vicky or any of you who have, because we're connected. It's not all about me at all. In fact, that's the complete opposite of what it's about. It's about others. So impressions, inner impressions through the Spirit. And you know they're not just the cheese or a rumbly tummy or stuff like that. I've been with an agency in Malawi, and I call it a tingle without a tingle. You hear something and it's like, ooh. And I note it down. There's something in it. And I will, with my agriculture, wandering around the village, note it down, and I'll take it back later, and I'll start looking for that thing wherever I go. Beekeeping, or all of them have come through that. A tingle without a tingle. So, impressions through people, dreams. Not the usual dreams, I forget, but these are highly detailed. I could reel them off now. I've written them down. And they have meaning, and I test them with Linda. I haven't, gone way off. And I often think that's the Lord, and that typically is the Father speaks to me that way. Not always, but it's the Father. And he's making it obvious. I'm not getting it. And he wants me to remember it when I'm in a real hole. I can remember a dream. And I carry it longer than words. Okay. No one's doing that. No. Okay, dreams. Visions, slightly different. I don't often, I think I've had 2 or 3 or 4, but they can, the last one lasted 1.5 hours. And you know when you read a book and you really get into it, you see like the picture, you get so absorbed. Well, that's what it's like. I'm not asleep, but it will run like a movie clip. And the last one was, it was from the Father, and he was showing me he was goodness, kindness, and gentleness in his core. That's what he wanted me to know. What he's like going back all those 40 years, I want to know you, Richard, and Richard, you to know me. That's all I want. I don't want you to do anything. You've prayed, I'll be like St. Paul, I'll go here, I'll go there. He said, actually, forget it. I just want to know you. So this is the Father all these years later answering that prayer. I am at my core. Yes, I'm omnipotent. Yes, I'm justice. Yes, I'm all-knowing. But actually, if you want to know me, the Father, I'm endless goodness. And you can't have kindness without goodness, and you can't have gentleness without kindness. They go like three little sisters, inseparable, holding hands. Skipping, down the road. So dreams, I remember them. I could reel off that. Oh, that's a vision. I could reel it off now. Exactly. I can. It's wonderful. That's fourth. The third one is a bit odd. I've had four of them in 40. I call them angel experiences, where I've prayed. I'm in a fix, typically a deep fix, and someone turns up out of the blue, out of nowhere, and sorts it out exactly in an extraordinary way, and then disappears. And that happens a lot, but four of them are really... and they're not like flapping angels. They're, one was an Australian with long hair in Bracknell Wood. Because I was broken down in my off-road vehicle with a friend. I've gone on too long. No. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay, the other one is Angel Experience, divine intervention. When something, I was in a car accident and my mate said it was great driving. I was hurtling backwards into oncoming traffic and I thought a hand just straightened the wheel and the broken axles that were causing the skid shot me out of it. That's very rare. But answers to prayer. These are coming back. And then the last one is knowledge, Miss Marple moments, if you've ever watched the Joan Hicks. You just know, like I did with my friend. So.
Yeah, I won't speak for too long, but I also realise that the academic within me has probably made a really simple point, like really complex. And hey, and I also went to see Mamma Mia yesterday, and I sang a little bit too hard at Waterloo at the end, and my voice has the potential to just, like, cut off, so just bear with me. So what Rachel said, I'm not an expert in prayer at all, and this is probably going to be nothing new to you, but I just felt like I should share just what prayer means to me, and then maybe allow some time at the end for you guys to respond if you want to do that. I don't know about anyone else, but I actually find prayer really hard. Especially when, you know, you're not in a good place. And the concept and ritual of prayer can actually be really challenging and really intimidating, for me sometimes anyway. And I can find it incredibly overwhelming. And, you know, when actually life is going really well and things are good, we get comfortable. And I know that I, like, kind of forget about prayer in those times. It gets neglected. And when you don't feel like you need to ask God for anything, there's no point. So for a long time, I think that's all prayer was for me, just asking God for stuff, or for something to change. So prayer for me is definitely a work in progress. And I know it's something that I need to have more grace in. I also need to learn to pray and actually give thanks for stuff, even when life is good. But, you know, it is in those kind of, like, dark times, those isolating times, where prayer really is the last thing you want to do, you know, and talking to God is the last thing you want to do. Actually, those are the moments for me where I've learnt the most about prayer, and kind of the discipline of it as well. You know, we're constantly told that, like, prayer is just having a conversation with God. You know, it should be really easy, relaxed, chilled out time, just talking with Jesus. But sometimes I don't really feel like talking to God. You know, and most of the times it's because I can't find the words. You know, and even when I do pray and I don't feel anything, that's really discouraging. And, you know, you just automatically assume that God isn't working for you. He's not listening. And, you know, that's a really normal human response to have. But it's letting your mood dictate how you choose to interact with God. And I started to realise that actually that was damaging my ability to, like, pray. So another reason I find prayer really challenging, and is one of the ways I've perceived prayer for, like, a really long time, is that I thought it had to be this really, like, long, eloquent, neatly packaged thing that you had to, like, present to God. And again, that's something that's really intimidating. And, you know, when you look at it as something that has to be done in a certain way, especially in a church context when there are people who are obviously very gifted in saying these long, eloquent prayers, and that's great. So what I was told was prayer, or what I perceived to be prayer, actually became a really stressful thing, which is why when I didn't feel the need to pray, because there was nothing wrong, I just didn't bother. So again, it's the tough times that really taught me about being authentic in my prayers, and not actually putting any expectation on prayer during those moments, when sometimes words do fail and we have no energy. So in that, I learned that prayer didn't look like what I'd been conditioned to see it as. And actually, I'd been praying all along. I just couldn't recognise it, because actually it's those small thank yous, those small frustrations you blurt out and aim at God that are your prayers. And it's those moments of reflection that you have when you're alone, when you have nothing to say, but you're focusing on God. Those are your prayers. And actually, there were a couple of things that Ness shared at the Junction when Vicky interviewed her that really spoke to me, purely because I was feeling exactly what she was describing. And one of the key things she said, which I think John shared last week maybe, she said that faith is being able to walk through the middle of pain and not turn your face away from the Father. And she also talked about that paradox of being in deep pain, but also knowing and experiencing deep peace as well. And whilst that's a really difficult thing to do, I was kind of asking myself, well, I know that, I felt that, and how do I do that? And what are the ways I know how to do that? And I think I realised that for me, that is prayer. And I'd actually unknowingly like taught myself how to pray. I just, again, didn't recognise it, because it didn't look like what it's supposed to look like when we think about prayer conventionally. Again, it's not the, you know, eloquent way we sometimes see in church context, or the poetic way we see in the Bible. And obviously there's a time and a place for that. But actually prayer is messy, and sometimes it's invisible to outsiders looking in. So I think prayer definitely has to be something that's personal to you. Just briefly again, another thing Ness mentioned was doing the breathing prayers with her daughter while they were in hospital. I don't know if you remember that. So it's that rhythmic and comforting way of just keeping your eyes on God when all other comfort seems lost, basically. And when she said that, it kind of really validated some of the ways I choose to focus on God through prayer. Because words do fail us sometimes, and you know, prayer doesn't come with a set of instructions. So I think in whatever ways you know how, I think just believe in that and know that it doesn't matter what the prayer looks like. It's just about that practice of having your gaze on God, on your Father. So you can turn to the Bible if you want, but I'm just going to briefly read out 1 Thessalonians 5:16, which says, "Rejoice always, praise without ceasing, in everything give thanks, for this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus." And again, while that's an incredibly hard thing to live out sometimes, and I know for me in the last 2 months, I've not wanted to rejoice in my prayers, which is okay, you are allowed to be angry as well. But I've also know that I've tried to look at the hopeful moments, and I really am like a firm believer in the fact that there's always something good, even in the most awful of times. And I only say that because I've had to train myself to do it, because otherwise you do lose your focus on God. So yeah, again, that's why prayer in whatever form it takes is an amazing discipline that kind of allows you to do that. Yeah, so if you quickly want to look at Romans 12:2, but I'll read it out again. "And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove that the will of God is that which is good, acceptable, and perfect." Now, this is one of these verses for me that just like keeps popping up in my life. But, you know, I struggled for a really long time to kind of figure out what it means. But I think that by fueling yourself with prayer, those prayers that are imperfect but messy is actually a way to transform and renew your mind. I think it'll probably take a lifetime to actually learn to do that. But prayer has to become your main frame of reference and your main network of thought. It's one of those cliche statements that gets thrown around a lot. But I think there is a lot of truth in it. And it's, we can't control what happens to us, but we can control our response. And for me, prayer is the best way to do that. And it's the only way I know how. As long as you realise that prayer doesn't always look or feel great whilst you're doing it. And it doesn't look or feel like it does to the people around you. So just one last thing I want to share. It's just one of the ways I choose to pray as kind of a matter of practice in order for it to become that discipline. And that's to write my prayers down. And again, that can look however you want it to look like. Usually mine looks like a letter. Sometimes it's like, you know, passive aggressive note to God. but it's authentic and it's just me telling God how I feel. And it might not be everyone's preference and that's fine. But I do think it's really valuable for your future self, to like record your prayers and hold on to them. I know I've found stuff that I've written down and then found it months later and realized that God has answered something or has been working through something, not usually in the way I specified, but it's been worked through. And it just gives you perspective. And sometimes we just need a reminder that God is for us and he's listening, even when in that moment in time, it doesn't feel like it. So basically, if you want to take anything away from the waffle I have just shared, I really believe that the prayers you pray, in whatever form that takes, will be some of the most important markers of your life. And that's why it's good to hold on to it and it's good to write it down. If you guys want to, I've got some paper and pens. If someone doesn't mind handing them out, can someone hand them out? So I just encourage you to maybe write down some prayers. If you can't think of anything, just give thanks for something. Write it however you want to, write a poem, draw a picture. Just do whatever feels natural. But I just encourage you to keep hold of it. In a place where you're likely to look at it again in a few weeks or months or years. And from my experience, it'll probably more than likely encourage you or give some encouragement to your future self. I'll just leave you with this quote as you do that, which I found on the internet. It might not be credible. But supposedly, John Bunyan, the author of The Pilgrim's Progress, said this: "You can do more than pray after you have prayed, but you cannot do more than pray until you have prayed." I'll just say that again. You can do more than pray after you have prayed, but you cannot do more than pray until you have prayed.